I'm Ken MacLeod. From the day we launched unfetteredmind.org, it has operated without a paywall, advertising, or a subscription charge. This is only possible through the generosity of people like you. If you find our materials useful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate. Thank you, and enjoy this podcast.
Unfettered Mind: The Nuts and Bolts of Physical and Mental Disturbances.
Well, any questions from this morning? Microphone. Sophie, isn't it?
Yep. You know, when you're talking about, like, who experiences the experience, if you're having, like, a lot of pain, who's experiencing that? I mean, you know, it's very difficult to transform that experience into emptiness.
You can't possibly transform it into emptiness. Whoever told you you could do something like that?
Well, I think, you know, I once saw a lama in Tibet who was in tremendous pain.
Right.
And he laid there smiling as people came in to bow before him. And I just am curious about that, because if you have pain or you see someone suffering, I mean, what's going on there? If there's no experiencer and no experience, and I know I'm confusing relative world with absolute.
I think this is a very good question, because I think there's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding around this. You can't transform pain into emptiness. For the same reason, you can't wake up a person who's pretending to sleep. I'll let you chew on that for a little bit. But it is actually the same reason. Now, I'll answer your question more completely in the last section this afternoon. But for now, because we're going to go into this, it isn't a question of transforming an experience into something else. It's a matter of experiencing what is arising as completely as possible. Because, I put it very simply, when you experience things completely, then you know what they are. How many of you got angry over the last week? How many of you took the anger that arose as a fact that you just had to act on? Yeah, let's be honest. If you got angry, all of you did. And we do that because we don't know at that moment what anger is. It appears to be very solid and have a lot of force, etc. But if we experience it completely, then we know that it is a movement in mind. In the same way that a wave is movement in water. I imagine most of you have had the experience in your meditation of sitting there fuming over something that happened the previous week or the previous day, and just sitting there, and think, okay, back to the breath. But he said this, and he said that. Anybody had this experience? And it goes on, you know, for 10 minutes, or 15 minutes, or 20 minutes, or whatever. And then suddenly you find yourself sitting there like this. And you're not angry at all. And you didn't decide not to be angry. You didn't say to yourself, oh, I've worked through this now. It just stopped. Right? Right? And some part of you may go like, what happened? I was so angry 3 minutes ago. And you try to remember the situation, but you can't get any juice in it. Anybody had this experience? Well, that arises because the anger has actually been felt. You know, it may sound a little stupid, but I say a lot of stupid things, so that's nothing unusual. But the function of a feeling is to be felt. And a feeling can't be complete until it is felt. Now, what happens if a feeling comes up and you try not to feel it? No, I don't really love him. How well does that one work? I'm not really angry with you. I just have a few things to tell you. Or the Charlie Brown version of this. Lucy says to Charlie Brown, I'm going to do you a favor, Charlie Brown. I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with you. Next frame. Why don't you get a sheet of foolscap? Next frame. Draw a column, a line down the center. Last frame. On second thought, get 2 sheets. No anger here at all. But when we experience it, and a lot of us don't do that very gracefully, but when it's actually being felt, being experienced, then it's finished. When we know this about feelings, then we can open to the experience of them. And we experience them vividly, just like our friend here, this piece of paper. And they come and they go. And something very important happens then. Can you be something that you experience that comes and goes? No. If it comes and goes in our experience, we can't possibly be it. So we can't be anger. Anger arises, but it can't be what we are in the way we were talking about this morning. Oh, okay. And not only that, we experienced it, we felt it, and the world didn't come to an end. Most people don't actually experience their emotions because they're afraid that if they do, the world will come to an end, or they'll die, or something like that will happen. So the more intimately we know our experience, the more we're able to just experience it.
Have ongoing pain, You know, pain isn't arising in the mind. It's arising in the sensory body.
Oh, I've experienced enough pain and enough anger to know that they're both equally intense experiences.
I'm not denying that, but I'm just saying that the anger is a thought that may be creating conditions in the body, whereas I'm talking about if someone, you know, is in a car accident and they're bleeding or there's the physical body suffering.
Yes, I understand. I know something about that. And it's not easy, but I don't think any of this is particularly easy. But in the same way that we're not the anger, we are not the pain. Pain is an experience. Now, it may require a more than trivial capacity in attention to be able to experience pain that way. That can be quite difficult. But it's possible. There's a second part which also makes things difficult, and that is chronic pain drains energy. It's physically and emotionally wearing. So even though you know and are able to experience it, it still drains energy from the system. So none of this is easy, but it is possible to experience pain as a sensation. And know it to be a sensation. And when you are able to do that, and as I said, it's primarily a matter of capacity. It's not grin and bear it stuff at all. Then, strangely enough, mind and body both relax. And you're able to be at ease in the pain. And this is what it sounds like that lama that you visited has been able to do. If it's purely physical pain, even though it may be fairly intense, it's not so hard. But when it's physical pain conjoined with emotional issues, then it can be quite difficult. But the principle remains the same. By developing a certain capacity and attention, then, yes, it is possible to find ease, even in the experience of pain. I'm not going to say it's easy, because it's not.
This is a question from Bruce in Seattle. During meditation, I concentrate on the breath and keep my eyes slightly open. My mind remains pretty devoid of thoughts and emotions, but I experience sensations of pressure in my head, especially the right frontal lobe area. Sometimes these sensations are not too perceptible, and at other times, there is significant ongoing presence. I've been suffering from an anxiety disorder for the last 5 years or so, which was brought on by the death of someone I loved very much, perhaps you could say obsessively. Do you have any suggestions or explanations?
There are several questions in what you pose here. So I'm going to try and break them out a little bit. First off, you say that I concentrate on the breath and keep my eyes slightly open. I suggest rather than concentrating on the breath, you rest in the experience of breathing. And the difference is that when you're concentrating on the breath, you're focusing the mind. And you're actually very often creating a bit of tension. I found that this quality of resting is very, very important in the meditation. So I encourage people to rest in the experience of breathing. Now you may say, well, I just fall off and I'll be distracted. And yes, that's going to happen. But there'll always be a moment of recognition. And whenever you recognize that you've been distracted, then you come back to the breath and rest in the experience of breathing. The other reason that I suggest this approach is that when you think of concentrating, energy can tend to move up into the head, because that's what we usually associate concentration with the brain. Whereas if you rest in the experience of breathing, you're going to remain more aware of your whole body and the way your whole body is participating in the activity of breathing. So there'll be a more open, resting attention rather than a tense, concentrated attention. And that open, resting attention is what we're actually trying to cultivate. That in itself may alleviate some of the sensations of pressure, because I imagine that's where they're coming. If I were able to talk with you in person, then I would have a number of follow-up questions, but I'm not able to do that right now. So this is my best sense of what is going on. Generally, if you have sensations of pressure in the head, it means that energy and tension is moved up there. And over a long time, it tends to create problems. So what I would suggest there is feel that your attention is coming from your navel area. So you're more in your body and you're resting more in the meditation rather than concentrating. The next thing you say is you've been suffering from an anxiety disorder for the last 5 years, brought on by the death of someone you cared about very much. You say, perhaps obsessively, well, I don't know. But I want to suggest that there's a difference between an anxiety disorder and experiencing grief. Here is a person you love very much, and they've passed away, and that may be 5 years ago, but it's a significant loss. And it takes time for that disengagement to happen. We're losing many parts of our lives that we value. And there may be a discomfort with that. The anxiety that you describe may be a way of avoiding letting go of this person, that they and really acknowledging at a deeper level that they have died. Now, I'm sorry for your loss. It's always painful when we lose someone that's close to us. But if we try to hold on to them, basically we're holding on to the past, we're living in the past. Now, I'm not saying you should actively try to say, I'm going to let this go. But you just feel the pain, and I would say it's probably primarily emotional pain, of this loss. And you use the breath as a way of staying present in that experience, just experiencing it as much as you can during your meditation practice, not trying to make it into something other than it isn't. I think if you let yourself experience the grief, which is the pain of separation, coming from the end of your friend passing, then I think you may find that the anxiety diminishes, because often anxiety is a way that we use to avoid feeling those things.
This question is from Glenda in Daytona Beach, Florida. What do you do when you've tried to learn what your life is teaching you and your mind comes up blank? I can't seem to get the lessons, so I re-experience even larger lessons relating to my health. I do want to learn and move forward. To be honest, I'm becoming afraid of the lesson.
Your question suggests that you keep running into one thing after another, and you don't know where it's leading. It also suggests that there's an idea that if you could just learn what was necessary, then everything would be okay, or everything would sort itself out. One of the, to my mind, trickier aspects of practice is to, when you're encountering really difficult obstacles, is to let go of the desire to work through them, or the wish to work through them. As long as we have that wish, and I'm detecting that in the vocabulary you use around lessons and learning, is that then even in a subtle, and it may be in a very subtle way, we're making our experience, what is arising in our experience, an enemy. This is very, very understandable when what is arising in experience is pain and illness and fear and so forth. But we don't actually have any call or say on what arises in experience. And a couple of weekends ago, I was teaching a program on karma. And I wanted to make this point about that we actually can't control what arises in our minds. So I asked somebody a question about spiders. And I asked another person about astronomy. And I said, did you expect to be discussing either spiders or astronomy at this weekend? They said, no. So in a certain sense, I had more control over what they were thinking than they did. Now, this is a very, compared to what you seem to be describing here, this is a very trivial example, but I just say this to point out that we actually don't have any control or call on what arises in experience. All we do have is how we experience it, how we relate to that experience. And what I'm saying here, as long as we relate to the experience with the intention of getting rid of it, then we're regarding experience, what is arising experience, as an enemy, and that creates a polarity which, generally speaking, perpetuates any suffering or struggle that is there. As a friend of mine puts it, we're in a box. If we ignore the box, we're in the box. If we pretend the box isn't there, we're in the box. If we try to get out of the box, we're in the box. We're in the box. The only thing that we can do is experience being in the box. And this is usually the last place that we want to go to. So I would encourage you, to the extent that you're able to, is to open to whatever is experiencing as tenderly and gently as you're able, as you can, and let go of the idea of learning from it, and see what happens. Another way of putting this is that possibly you could say you're experiencing some kind of block. But in the book called Radical Acceptance, it's pointed out that a block always consists of two components. Something that wants to move and something that doesn't want to move. And we call a block, what we're experiencing a block, when you've identified with a part that wants to move. We actually don't have to identify with a part that wants to move. We don't have to identify with a part that doesn't want to move. We could just experience both at the same time. That would be the complete experience. So that's what I suggest, and perhaps that would be helpful to you in some way.
Jason in Albuquerque, New Mexico asks, around age 19, I started having panic attacks. The bouts come and go, but recently I've had a series of especially terrifying ones. I've tried to use my sitting practice for help, but they keep coming. When they hit, I'm powerless to the terror, and afterward it lingers, and I'm always scared for its return. How do I deal with my panic attacks?
Well, I'm a little short on information here because you say 19 and I have no idea how old you are now. Nor am I clear about how long you've been sitting. Generally speaking, you've got two or three levels here. There's the arising of anxiety, and then there's an anxiety attack, and then there's a panic attack. And what I'm not clear about from your question is whether there is a process of accumulation and intensification, or whether these are come right out of the blue just immediately. In order to give you some help here in ways that I feel might be helpful to you, I'm going to make the assumption that there's a progression here. So if we look at anxiety becoming an anxiety attack and then becoming a panic attack, what is happening there is that one is reacting, something happens, there's a reaction to that, then we react to the reaction, then we react to the reaction to the reaction, and it just spirals. It can spiral very quickly, and it can become extremely intense and ends up being a panic attack. The key to this is, to changing this, is to develop, through your sitting practice, an ability to recognize reactions and then just step out of them. The way you step out of them is that as soon as you recognize a reaction is beginning, you just go to your breath, you go to your body breathing, and you ground yourself in that. One possibility is, there are two things that I can suggest here. One is, where are your feet, where are your hands, where is your head? And just asking those questions, you feel your feet on the floor, which grounds your body, where your hands allows you to be in touch with what you are emotionally, whereas my head puts you in touch with the stories you're telling. And if you're able to touch into those and stay in the present, you will see you're likely to see that there may be some there's some discrepancy between what you're feeling and what is actually going on. Another method which some people have found helpful is when they feel this happening is to look at all four walls or in all four directions of wherever you are, which reorients you in your surrounding. Feel your body, in particular, again, feel your feet on the ground so that you ground. First you reorient yourself and then you ground in the body. Now, I doubt that these will be immediately helpful, but as you practice these over and over again, you're going to accumulate some momentum. and that may be helpful. In addition to both of those methods, I would encourage you to form an intimate relationship with your breath so that whenever you feel about coming on, or even when it is going on, you train yourself to go to the breath, and in particular the sensations in your body when you're breathing. This is also going to ground you, pull you out of the spiral reactions, and hopefully will be of some help too.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.